This podcast was made possible by the Heising-Simons Foundation. The Center on Enhancing Early Learning Outcomes at the National Institute for Early Education Research presents Legacy 2030, Pioneers in Early Childhood Education. On this episode, we speak with Eugene Garcia, Professor Emeritus and Research Professor, Arizona State University. Gene, what research and experiences influenced your career?
Probably my background. Come from a very large family, rural family. Speaking Spanish as our first language. And essentially seeing the educational, unfortunately, the educational unattainment of many of my older brothers and sisters. I'm number 9 out of 10. So I get to see that personally. So I was always interested in what education might do to better not only myself, but others in my family. My mother was deeply concerned that we go to school because we were farm workers. We all worked in the fields. And she clearly made it important that we go to school because, as she described it, I cannot do what others might be able to do for you. And those people are in that place called school. And so she insisted all of us went to school, even though we worked in the fields. My father added to this interest in education because he had a saying in Spanish. Not only himself, but all his brothers and sisters would say in Spanish, "La educación nunca te pueden quitar," says, which translated roughly means they can't take away what you've learned. They can't take away your education. So very powerful in terms of education and its importance to me and that family.
What lessons from the past have been lost or forgotten and need to be relearned?
The idea that early education or education in general or learning environments in general are essentially there to augment and to be in some way better what kids come with. Back to this issue of assets, those kids already come with experiences that are pretty powerful. Social experiences, cognitive experiences, developmental experiences that have to do with language and so many other things. And early childhood and educators in general still don't understand the intersection between previous developmental and learning environments and experiences and what we're trying to do as early childhood educators. Probably the significance of the family and the communities in which these kids live. I think too often, I think always this country has been big on families. We have policies that support families. We debate about what is a family, but the family's always there. I think for a while there in the early child education, we did what K-12 does, is we start to focus on the child and we develop the outcome measures and so forth on the child. I think what we forgot is that those children live outside of that place called a preschool or outside of that place we call an early care or early learning environment. They live in families, they live in communities, and most of them are fairly robust. Very few people have a problem learning a language. That happens outside of any place called preschool or learning environment. It happens in families and communities. That's a powerful skill, to learn a language. Learning a second language. Many kids in the U.S. do that outside of the place called preschool. And primarily in families, essentially, that support and nurture those skill development endeavors. So I think we forgot about where kids essentially learn and develop before they come to the place called preschool. And then once we have them in a place called a learning environment, a preschool or whatever, we forgot that the family still exists and still powerful in what goes on in that child's life. So they need to become partners in the endeavor. And I think we need to relearn that lesson.
What are the major advancements we've made in the early childhood education of dual language learners?
Quite honestly, we need to understand that everyone ought to be multilingual. I have argued for universal pre-K, but I would also argue for universal multilingualism, starting early. And I do that for a number of reasons. One, we know it's not a problem. Kids can handle more than one language. Secondly, it generates essentially an asset for those kids later. It allows them to understand that there are others who speak a language other than theirs, and a little bit about those individuals who speak that language other than their own. So I think it is not only an asset for them when they're 4, 5, or 6 years old, but later in life, where they become economically more viable because they speak another language.
What have you learned about effective teacher education for early childhood educators and leaders?
Well, we've learned generally in teacher education that it's a clinical enterprise. It's not a intellectual enterprise. You need to combine the knowledge base with practice. And so what's changed in my experience, particularly as serving as a dean of three schools of education, is that we needed to expand the opportunities for our students to actually learn in a clinical setting what actually works. Combine that with the kinds of knowledge base that is needed to understand not only does it work, but why does it work? I think this intersection of how, what, and why are important in teacher education. And what we used to do is just deal with the why, too much theory, not enough practice, or just focus on the practice. And lastly, I would say that one of the things that I have experienced is ensuring that our early childhood educators can deal with families and communities. Back to this issue that I raised earlier about discovering the family and the communities which kids live, preschool teachers has to be able to communicate to parents and the entire family. They don't need to be able to teach in the language, but they'll be able to fundamentally communicate what early childhood is about, what's happening with their children, and engage, again, parents and families as partners. One of the projects we did for the Ford Foundation was to look at effective teachers serving, at that time we'll call them Hispanic students, call them Latinos now. And the best teacher we found was a woman who was from Indiana and worked in the Southwest, and she was fabulous. What she did is she became of the culture. She understood. She was bilingual. But she would go to community settings. She would visit homes. She went to what we call tardeadas, Sunday afternoon. Families get together. You know, they just barbecue. She was there. She went to quinceañeras. She went to bautismos. I mean, she became of the culture. I mean, she still had her own cultural identity. But she understood that understanding the kids and the communities and the families was critical in her teaching, and it was reflected in her teaching.
What do you think is needed to improve early childhood education policy in the next decade?
What I think policymakers need to understand, one, is that early learning experiences are critical in many ways, not just for what happens later in your life, but what happens immediately in your life. Those early learning experiences are powerful. Therefore, investing in those is probably a good idea. And I would certainly argue that we ought to invest in those universally. I think we ought to invest in those for all children and all families and all communities. I think it pays tremendous dividends to the children themselves, to the families, and to the communities in which they live.
What advice do you have for the next generation of academics and scholars studying young dual language learners?
The new frontiers are really the intersection of language, cognition, and brain development. We didn't have the technology in my day, when I went to graduate school or undergraduate school or whatever, to understand those links. And now we do have that technology. And what I say to my younger colleagues is, do the kind of work that links essentially what we know about neurophysiology, neurodevelopment, and those things that we now call cognition and language. I think those are the new frontiers, and I can envision a day in which we know enough about the brain physiology and development of the brain that we can link that then to kinds of practices, because I do think that that the kinds of experiences children have from birth and maybe even pre-birth to when we all sort of are pioneers, that there are still interactions between our experiences and our brain physiology as structures. And if we know those, that gives us a heads up. That means preschool, early care, professionals, those of us who care about how we engineer or provide the design the architecture of learning environments, we need to pay attention to how those learning environments affect the brain. There's a lot more science that needs to essentially be developed so that early childhood education can essentially live in a place that's political, that's really practice-oriented, but science should play a role.
Thank you, Eugene. The Center on Enhancing Early Learning Outcomes at the National Institute for Early Education Research would like to thank the Heising Simons Foundation for its support of the Legacy 2030 Pioneers in Early Childhood Education Project. For more information about CELO's Legacy 2030 project, visit our website, celo.org/celo-legacy-2030. Thank you.